南無妙法蓮華経、南無妙法蓮華経、南無妙法蓮華経。Hello, friends, good friends. Thank you for your practice. Yeah, thank you for being here. I hope this finds you in good health and safe. I really do. I don't mean to sound blasé about that. It's just we live in a very tumultuous world today. So I really do. It's so hard to talk about the violence in the world today. Anyway, let's not. Prediction for 500 monks. Chapter 6 of the Lotus Sutra. I went through the whole book yesterday of this translation, and as I was reading in the last video, it occurred to me that this flippy-flop of Tathagata, Buddha, world-honored one, blah, 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 it's not clearly grammatically consistent in any of the translations that I've read, and in this translation that I'm trying to uncluster, I decided that I couldn't tolerate it. So, as a rule, Tathagata, yes, is Buddha, but Tathagata as a term, let's all agree that that's the universal engine of life. The Tathagata is the Tathagata-ness. It's a suchness. So is Buddha a suchness, but Buddha is so much more rhetorically tied to an entity, right? A human entity, right? There are no gods in Buddhism, so don't go there. So I thought, well, that needs to be reinforced in the grammar of how these terms are used. I mean, why have 10 different terms for the same thing? They obviously have subtle differences in their meaning. And Buddhism is all about the meaning, right? So Shakyamuni is a man. Shakyamuni has attained Buddha-ness. That Buddha-ness is cosmos universal Tathagata in the personage of Shakyamuni. Enlightenment, his Buddha-ness is of the universal Tathagata-ness. Does that make sense? The terms start to have a subtle difference here. And I went through the entire book and adjusted this rhetoric. So the print book that I'm working from here is an older revision. But what's online is the most current. So just if you see me stumbling a little bit with the grammar, it's because I've just corrected all of this, okay? But one important point as we get going here in chapter 6 is I want you to pay close attention to the rhetoric in the first part of the first, well, it's the second paragraph. The first paragraph is simply, at that time, the world-honored one, after pronouncing this verse, addressed all the great assembly, uttering words like these. Notice it says like these, because even the translators know that to go from one language to another, from one culture to another, it's slippery to capture the depth of meaning. And I believe one of the beliefs that I have is that that is the very reason why the language, especially English, being a very bizarre language, we won't get into that, has trouble capturing the essence of the meaning that was much more clear, although still obfuscated, by the language of Sanskrit, right? I mean, Shakyamuni taught in Prakrit, a not exactly Sanskrit language, because he was using the language of the common people. Well, India has over 125 national languages, all very distinct. So language, I mean, India is not the model to go by a standard of language. You have to rely, and even Sanskrit is affected by intonation. It's more of a singing language than it is a spoken language. Look at Chinese, same way today, yes? How you inflect certain characters changes their meaning. Look, I'm French, and I know in my own language that intonation, placement in the sentence, this is also true in English, by the way, but it's much more easily seen in Latin languages, where the placement of words themselves changes the meaning entirely. So how we get to these English translations is quite a long path. And the opportunity for people sticking their own cultural truths into their understanding can really, really throw a person off who's looking at the words and has no recourse but to take the words literally in order to find understanding. I understand that makes things difficult. But you have to understand, it's my whole life. I've been like this since I was a little kid, that to understand meaning is what I've always been obsessed with. It's part of my autistic tendencies. So my whole mission in this school is to uncluster blah 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 the language in order to make the most clear communication of the language reflect the intent, the intended meaning. I just added, because somebody asked me this question again, and I've answered it many, many times in different videos, sometimes specifically for this purpose. But I realized, you know, it's in our Gongyo that we do the correct transmission of the Buddhist teachings, yeah? So right at the top of the core study materials page on threefoldlotus.com, I put a link there that says correct transmission. And I have a short blurb on why it is, because the question comes up, how is it after thousands of years that we don't yet have a clear translation? Well, I understand the question, but that's not really the right question. But then I realized, well, that's my whole raison d'être. That's why I'm here. That's what I'm doing. So it's a short one pager that describes what I understand from language and cultures and time and what we're faced with today with our quick sound bites of manipulations and influence constantly hitting us. It's more and more important in our age to get as close to the rhetorical sense of the meaning without, and this is key, the obfuscation, the misdirection of traditions and cultural norms. You know, you ask anyone in the world about the United States of America, and they'll tell you it's a Christian country. Well, no, it is not. But that's the apparent wisdom. This is not a Christian country, the United States. It wasn't set up. In fact, the United States Charter and the Constitution was set up specifically to get away from royalty and kings and tyranny and of religion as much as government. It's the First Amendment. But still, it continues, right? And my stepson was learning this rhetoric from the Bible, not supposed to be taught in schools. It doesn't prevent teachers from doing, well, I'm Christian, I'm going to teach the way I want. And I'm just using that as an example. It's the same thing in Muslim countries and Jewish countries. Look what's going on in Israel right now. I don't want to get political, but my goodness, how can you miss it? So it affects the way we communicate. And the way we can communicate is an influence, isn't it? And language is amorphous anyway. It's mutable. So if you're trying to learn the meaning of Shakyamuni's Buddhism to get to Tathagata-ness, you need as few words that are moving you this way or that away from the clear intent of Shakyamuni's teachings, yeah? Now listen carefully to this paragraph, so I'm going to stop my rant. This, my disciple, Mahakashyapa, who just got through communicating with Shakyamuni in the last chapter, in the world to come, what do you suppose that means in our rhetoric, right? The next moment, the world to come, shall do homage to 300 myriad kodas of world-honored Buddhas. Are there that many little floating guys on lotus flowers in the air? That's not Buddha. That's not a person. This honored Buddhas is you and I. It's everyone. It's every human, sentient mind, living being, has innate within us, Buddha. And so by behaving as a bodhisattva, we touch that Buddha-ness in everyone. You don't have to be talking to them. It's a state of being. That's Buddha. Buddha suchness. So when you pay homage, revere, serving, honoring, and extolling them, that's your influence. Remember, I say you radiate out this life condition, but it requires that you attain it and maintain it. And widely proclaiming the infinite great law of the Buddhas. There it is. It's very clear if you pay attention, even in a translation, what the intent is here. Yes? Now, this is super important because this is what I've already said many times. The Lotus Sutra is very critical about making this point that those who've been following Shakyamuni's teachings for the last 40 years have missed this critical point. They haven't learned yet that there's no afterlife, there's no reincarnation, there's no someday, somewhere in the millennia, we'll meet a Buddha and we too can become Buddhas. No, it's happening right now. But they're not getting it because rhetoric, culture, tradition, right? Well, we're not that much different today. We just have a lot of cultures, a lot of traditions, a lot of rhetoric. It's in our commercials. Every program you watch on TV or TikTok or so on and so forth, it's everywhere. So much so that we're just not conscious of it. This is how language breaks down understanding. It becomes the receptor. It's like making biscuits, simple recipe. But everybody's got to add a pinch of this or a pinch of that. By the time you go... thousands of years making biscuits, you may end up with some mud cake of children's poop and you wouldn't know any. Ooh, biscuits, I don't like them. That's because you don't have the first clue what a real biscuit is. Same thing. Now listen to this sentence and tell me if you don't get it. In his physical body, human state, in his physical body, human state, he will become a Buddha. How large does that loom if you really think about what this sentence is saying? I don't, even if the translator didn't understand what he was saying, we do. In his physical body, human state, he will become a Buddha, whose name will be called Radiant Tathagata, worthy of praise, all wise, perfectly enlightened in conduct. Well departed, understander of the world, peerless leader, controller, teacher of universal realms of influence and men, Buddha, world honored one, whose domain is named Radiant Virtue and whose kalpa is named Great Significance or Magnificence, sorry. What is that all saying? It has to be cleared. It has to be clear. In his physical body, human state. How many words can we throw in there to get this meaning across? Right now, in the next moment, you will inculcate, you will receive, you will belong, you will be immersed in Tathagata, and we will call you this magnificent radiance, Buddha. Because Buddha is you physical body human state with the enlightened mind, Buddha. You've ingested, you've married your physical body human state with universal Tathagata. Therefore, we'll call you in the Saha world a Buddha. Buddha, an instantiation of Tathagata. Well, that's the whole trick. That's the whole game right there. It's just the rhetoric we're having trouble with. Because if you've read in the Buddhism Reference, if you've listened to the videos on Buddhism Reference, if you look at the Engine of Life, look up Engine of Life on this channel and see the videos that come up and listen to them, especially the ones labeled Buddhism Reference. The Engine of Life is what science is just barely on the cusp of understanding: quantum fluctuations, quantum fields where energies, quiescent energy goes through formation, in, out, matter, antimatter, all of that, blah, 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 all the language you want to throw at it, enters the realm of form. Plasma. Atoms. Particles. Molecules. Stuff. The realm of forms. This is what we're all formed of. Right? Stars, galaxies, planet, dirt clod, tree, animal, you, me. We're all formed from the same stuff the same way. That's Tathagata. Yeah. And when we align our brain consciousnesses, our mind, with that truth, and experience that truth, we're Buddha, a human manifestation of Tathagata. It's so clear. And here it is, we're not even through the first paragraph, and he's spelling it out. Let's continue. The lifetime of that Buddha will be 12 minor kalpas. His right law will abide in the world for 20 minor kalpas, and the semblance law will also abide for 20 minor kalpas. His domain will be beautiful, empty of dirt, potsherds and thorns and unclean order. Its land will be level and straight. You know, this is all the rhetoric of the pure land. Yeah, you don't need to go anywhere. You don't need to die to get to Amida's pure land. That's not right. The pure land is here and now. It's your land. Perceived through Buddha-ness. Through understanding of Tathagata. Who we really are is happening every moment and dying every moment. Reinstantiating every moment. That's us. That process, that momentum. That's you and I. Not yesterday's whatever. That's no longer. You can't even locate it. Everything is moving at an incredible rate. The Buddhism is about keeping up. See what's happening now, 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 now. Isn't this amazing? Yeah. So when he talks about kalpas, he's talking about the depth of influence. You go through habits every day, and you don't even perceive the time passing you by. Suddenly, I'm going to try to use something positive instead of negative. You meet somebody, and within seconds, nanoseconds, your heart's beating faster. Your body feels more erect, more alive. You seem to be breathing in more oxygen cells than usual. Your eyes are wider. You're infatuated. I saw him, and I didn't, it's like I forgot how to speak. Our eyes met, and she was just glowing in my mind. I couldn't stop staring. You ever had those moments? Love at first sight, or just deep bodily infatuation. It takes a while for your mind to catch up. You're just stunned. And you could talk about that moment. Maybe it happened 40 years ago, but you can still talk about that moment. That's the idea of kalpas. The effect, the pervasiveness of the influence of that moment. That's what kalpas are. Not the duration. Our eyes met for how long? I don't know. It seemed like an eternity. Kalpa. His domain will be beautiful, empty of dirt. You ever notice when you see that person or when that happens? Or maybe it's a car. I don't know who you are or what your infatuations are, but doesn't the air becomes beautiful? Even if it was raining, you're like, the rain was so gorgeous. That's what all that is about. In that domain, the bodhisattvas will be infinite thousand kotas with sravakas numberless. No mara demons, no negative influences will be there. And though there are mara and mara's people, they all will protect the Buddha law. At that time, the world-honored one, desiring to proclaim this teaching over again, spoke thus in verse. I say to you, bhikshus and bhikshunis, that with my Buddha eyes, I see that this Kashyapa in the world to come after innumerable kalpas will become a Buddha, and that in the world to come, he will serve and pay homage to 300 myriad kotas of world-honored Buddhas. That's how many people he'll convert. That's how many people he'll influence. For the sake of the Buddha wisdom, he will purely practice the Brahma life, serving the highest and most honored of men, putting into practice all the peerless wisdom, and in his physical body, human state, become a Buddha. So he said it again. It wasn't just flowery language. This is the verse section. This is what everyone was memorizing. Remember this. His land will be pure, with lapis lazuli for ground, abundance of jewel trees lining the roadsides, gold cords to bound the ways, rejoicing the beholders, ever-pervading fragrance, rare flowers strewn everywhere, every kind of rarity adding to his splendor. Its land will be level, free from mounds and hollows. Nothing. There is no obstacle to keep me away from this. Many bodhisattvas of untold number and gentle mind will attain great transcendent powers and reverently keep the Buddha's great vehicle sutras. Correct transmission. His multitude of shravakas, who he's teaching a lesser vehicle because that's where they're at in their lives. This is why he's saying the semblance dharma will have a duration as well. It's not everyone is ready to turn on the Buddha switch. That's okay. They'll get there. Of faultless final form, sons of the law king will be beyond count. Even the eyes of the universal realms of influence cannot know their number. That Buddha's lifetime will be 12 minor kalpas. His right dharma law will abide in the world for 20 minor kalpas. So whatever you think a kalpa is, that duration of influence, think 20 minor kalpas. A long time. The semblance law will abide for 20 minor kalpas. Even the lesser teachings from this bodhisattva / Buddha will remain influencing people long beyond his extinction. Yeah? Such will be the history of the radiant world honored one. Thereupon, Mahamadgalayana, Subhuti, Mahakachayana, and others, all trembling. Oh, this is major, right? Remember that feeling of infatuation? Oh. Folded their hands with one mind, and gazing up to the world-honored one's face, not for an instant lowering their eyes, with united voice spoke thus in verse. Great hero, world-honored one, law king of the Shakyas. Right? Shakyas, the clan that Siddhartha Gautama was from. Right? Shakya Muni, the great sage of the Shakyas. Out of compassion for us, grant us the Buddha announcement. Damn it! This has got to be frustrating as beebaloop, right? Or how do the
kids say it today? AF.
If you don't know the depths of our mind and predict our future destinies, it will be like pouring sweet dew to change the heat of coolness, like one from a famined land, suddenly finding a royal repast, yet cherishing doubt and fear, not daring at once to eat, but when instructed by the king, then daring to eat. Really, really, they're still stuck in this mindset. That's all well and good for Mahakashyapa, but, you know, what about us? He just told everyone, this is what you achieve yourself. It's innate. In your body, human body state, you attain Buddhahood. Not in some far-off lifetime or whatever. And all of these other senior monks are going, give us permission. Holy crap. You have permission. It's innate, right? They're still not getting it. But Buddha is nothing if not compassionate. Thus it is with us, these monks say. While minding Hinayana error, we know not how to obtain the supreme wisdom of the Buddhas. I just told you. We don't know how to do it. We know we're wrong. Though we hear the voice of the Buddha who says we shall become Buddhas, our hearts are still anxious and afraid like him who dare not eat. But if we receive the Buddha's prediction, then shall we be happy and at ease. Oh, my goodness. Great hero, world-honored one, please ever desire to pacify the world. That's what you want. You want a pacifier. Be pleased to bestow our prediction like biding the famished to feast. If I'm famished and you lay a roast duck in front of me, my face is oily with the skin of that duck before you say, go ahead, eat. I guess it'd be polite. Right? And we are polite people, aren't we? Thereupon, the world-honored one, knowing the doubts in the minds of those senior disciples, addressed all the bhikshus. Now, I have a little insight here. In the, quote, knowing the thoughts in the minds of those senior disciples, end quote, it is useful to understand that the monks following the three vehicles accepted that Buddhahood was not only something unachievable in this lifetime, but also that upon the distant future, opportunity to achieve it, Buddhahood, only an actual Buddha could confer that enlightenment upon them, right? So they're still hanging on to that training. This is delusion to the absurd, but accepted nonetheless. Wow, finding a lot of typos here. I think I already fixed these. But so when the text reads that Shakyamuni understood the minds of these monks, the suggestion is that his compassion led him to take the easiest route for their understanding and simply confer upon them that which they were awaiting and capable to accept and understand. It is also the clarity of the Buddha mind that affords bodhisattvas as well as Buddhaness the insights of people's tendencies and conditions, and to use this insight to teach the law using skillful means or expedient devices. So you might say, yes, this was the Buddha's compassion, right? But you might also say, giving them permission is also an expedient means. I don't know. To me, it's a little frustrating, but I get it. I'm learning. This Subhuti, Shakyamuni talking now, in the world to come, shall do homage to 300 myriad kotas of nayutas of Buddhas, serving, revering, honoring, and extolling them, practicing the Brahma life, and perfecting the Bodhisattva way in his physical body human state. He will become a Buddha whose title will be name form Tathagata, worthy of praise, all wise, perfectly enlightened in conduct, well departed, understander of the world, peerless leader, controller, teacher of the universal realms of influence and men, Buddha, world-honored one, whose kalpa is named possessing jewels, and whose domain is named jewel-producing. His land will be level and straight, with crystal for ground, and so on and so forth, right? At that time, the world-honored one, desiring to proclaim this teaching over again, spoke thus in verse, all you host of Buddhas, all you senior, host of bhikshus, all of you senior monks, I have something to tell you. All with one mind, listen to what I say. My senior disciple Subhuti will become a Buddha whose title will be name form. He will serve numberless myriad kotas of Buddhas, and following the practice of Buddhas will become perfect in the great way. In his physical body, human state, he will obtain the 32 signs and be erect and beautiful as a mountain of jewels. The domain of the Buddha will be peerless and pure splendor, so that those all who behold it will love and delight in it. The Buddha in its midst will save innumerable beings, or liberate innumerable beings. In his Buddha law, many will be the bodhisattvas, all of keen faculties. Who roll the never-receding wheel. His domain is ever ornate with bodhisattvas. His sravaka host is beyond expression and count, who all attained the three clear views, perfect the six transcendent faculties, abide in the eight emancipation, and are greatly awe-inspiring. That Buddha teaches the law, revealing himself in infinite supernatural transformations beyond conception, universal realms of influence and people, all as the sands of the great Ganges in number, all with folded hands, hearken to that Buddha's words. That Buddha's lifetime will be 12 minor kalpas. His right Dharma law will abide in the world for 20 minor kalpas, and the semblance law will also abide for 20 minor kalpas. He's repeating the same exhortation, qualification. He's giving them what they want, their permission to achieve all that is achievable through their enlightenment. Yeah. At that time, the world-honored one again addressed all of the assembly of bhikshus, everyone, not just the seniors, saying, "Now I announce to you that this Mahakatayana in the world to come will revere and serve 8,000 kodas of Buddhas with many kinds of offerings, revering and honoring them. After those Buddhas are extinct, he, for each of them, will erect stupas 1,000 yohanas in height, of equal length and breadth, 500 yohanas, composed of the precious seven jewels, gold, silver, lapis, lazuli, moonstone, agate, jewel, and carnelian, and will serve those stupas with garlands of flowers, perfume, sandal powder, burning incense, silk canopies, flags, and banners. After this, he will again similarly serve 200 or 2 myriad kodas of Buddhas, and having served these Buddhas, he will complete his bodhisattva way and become a Buddha whose title will be Jambunanda Golden Light." Jambunanda is a river that's reputed to have gold in it. Tathagata, worthy of praise, all perfect, blah, 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 Buddha, world honored one. His land will be level and straight. You know the thing. Will adorn his domain, the lifetime of that Buddha, 12 minor kalpas, his right Dharma abide in the world, 20 minor kalpas, the counterfeit law or semblance law also abide for 20 minor. At that time, the world honored one, desiring to proclaim this teaching over again, spoke thus in verse, "All of you, host of bhikshus." He's going to pronounce the same thing. He's going to add little differences, right? "For each of them, calling them out by name, this Katyayana will, with various kinds of excellent offerings, paying homage to the Buddhas," and so on and so forth. "Thereupon, the world-honored one, once again, addressed the great assembly, saying, 'Now, I announce to you the Maha Maudgalyayana will, with various kinds of offerings, serve 8,000 Buddhas." So for Maudgalyayana. Right, but now he's applying this not only to these senior monks who are questioning him, but also to all. They lead large hosts of monks, right? So he's saying it to all of them. So look, your leader and you by default. Da, 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 da. "Thereupon, the world-honored one, desiring to proclaim this teaching over again, spoke in verse, 'This, my disciple, Maha Maudgalyayana, after casting aside this body, will see..." Now, casting aside this body. Why is he saying that? He doesn't mean after he dies. This is the rhetoric of Buddhism, right? When you're no longer attached to the skandhas, the pleasures of the lower consciousnesses of the body, sense, touch, smell, taste, sight. When you stop being preoccupied by that, cast that aside in your mind. Always remember, Buddhism is about the mind. And your focus becomes enlightening other beings, ending, liberating them from their attachments. Ultimately, and what's the biggie in the Lotus Sutra that he's really nailing over and over again in some form in every chapter? That final clinging attachment to your body as a source of pleasure is keeping you from experiencing the momentum of your life. This will come along. It's still going to be there. But it shouldn't be the focus of your mind. That is samsara, Mr. Arhat. That you haven't let go of yet. Because the Arhat still thinks, this is my last body. Well, that is hanging on to it. That implicitly says, when I die, I'm out of here. No, when you die, you're dead. You need to get out of here now. Your body doesn't matter. It comes along with the ride. Well, casting aside his body, we'll see 8,200 myriad codas of world-honored Buddhas, and for the sake of the Buddha way, we'll serve and revere them. How the hell is he going to serve and revere them if he has no body? It's not about the actual physical Saha world, right? It's about how you think. Among these Buddhas ever practicing the Brahma life for the innumerable kalpas, he will keep the Buddha law. After these Buddhas are extinct, he will erect stupas, the precious seven jewels, displaying afar their golden spires, and with flowers, perfumes, and music, pay homage to the stupas of the Buddhas. Having gradually accomplished the Bodhisattva way in the domain glad mind, he will become a Buddha styled Tamalapatra, sandal fragrance. The lifetime of that Buddha will be 24 kalpas. Constantly to universal realms of influence and men, he will teach the Buddha way. Sravakas will be innumerable as the sands of the Ganges, having three clear views, the six transcendent faculties, and awe-inspiring powers. Bodhisattvas will be numberless, firm in their will, and zealous in the Buddha wisdom. Single-minded, you might say. Who never backslide. After this Buddha is extinct, his right Dharma law will abide for 40 minor kalpas. Ooh, he's better than you. And the semblance law the same. You, my disciples of perfect powers, 500 in number, all will receive their prediction to become Buddhas in the world to come. Of my and your development in precious world, previous worlds, I will now make this declaration. Do you all listen? Well, so that's chapter 6. Yeah, chapter 6. The next chapter, one of my favorite, really brings home what he's been saying throughout. And now he wants to explain again because of his compassion. So these all of this assembly, the fourfold assembly, everybody, how it is they've come to inculcate their own traditions and misunderstandings, while he, Buddha, Shakyamuni, simply endeavored to give them, I was going to say minor, but it's not minor, it's a temporary goal to keep them aspiring and moving forward. The next chapter is the parable of the conjured city. So he'll offer an explanation, because with that explanation, he expects them to understand why they tripped up, how they maybe have allowed improper influences to mess up their aspirations. And now he's clearing the way, saying you don't have to do that anymore. We're going to go the rest of the way now. You're ready, right? And he's been explaining that, and they've been getting that, but now he just wants to cement that relationship with them again, right? So he's going to give them the parable of the conjured city so they understand their own foibles and how this is a learning opportunity. How do we get beyond these obstacles that we ourselves create because of misunderstanding? Yeah. So chapter 7. A good one. A good one. Okay. Thank you for listening. Thank you for staying the course. As always, I am so grateful for your support. Simple like and subscribe takes a few seconds. Doesn't cost you anything. And it helps the algorithms promote this resource. Not just the videos, but the free, the podcasts, the website, the bookstore, the mandala store. Yeah. And those of you who purchase ebooks and print books, thank you. Thank you so much. Patrons, I don't know how. All I do is honor your universal worthy bodhisattva behavior. Thank you. Take care of your health. I'll see you in the next one. As I say, bye for now.